Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And part of the mind power is going to be dealing with innovation and invention. So many of us look at the news or we look at our lives and say, how can we do things better? What is it that we could do that could make energy more efficient? Why can't we have a car that can run on its own energy, or on water, or on whatever? We have vivid imagination, but it seems like change is a very difficult thing to implement when it comes to technology. And, as so many people know, when you have a technology that's disruptive, well, it can be even tougher. To find out more about this, we're going to be talking with my guest today, John Raymond Takeus. His book is titled The Take Us, and it's won a number of awards. It is a fictitious story that's loaded with a lot of factual information. I want to welcome John to the airwaves. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate this.
I don't do a lot of fictitious books when I'm reviewing them on the show. But when I got yours, I was intrigued because of the fact that it was relating to the development of an engine. And this is such a fascinating story. But before I get into that, I want my audience to know that you served in the 101st Airborne Division in Vietnam. You were awarded a Purple Heart for your injuries in combat. But you are an inventor, and you love the outdoors. You really have a very vivid imagination. Most inventors have to have that anyway. And you have a passion, in a sense, for disruptive technology. Do you think you inherited that from someone in your family, John? Or is this just, well, this is just John?
I think that my brother, Don, he was also an inventor. He was very successful. Died very early of cancer. He's only 46 when he died. But he had a number of inventions for a large corporation back in Indiana that he had gotten patents for the corporation, so to speak. And him and I together had come up with quite a few ideas together, and they were always fun. We never made any money off of them, but they were a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to turn to writing? Is this a very good outlet for you? Did you feel that because of your wonderful interest, I mean, having an association like this with a brother is just fabulous, and that inventive part of yourself, did you feel that you could actually do something and make a difference through your writing?
Well, that's really interesting. That's a great question. And the reason that's so great is because they're almost exactly the same, inventing and writing. I would really like to tell you I'm really smart and good at this stuff, but the truth of the matter is I think there's somehow you connect into something and you get these ideas that grow in your mind and just fruit into a great story or a great product. I mean, somewhere along the line, you have to have the leap from the simple little thought. I mean, writers call it the germ of an idea that develops into a total whole book. And with the Takeus, what I did was kind of combined the both of those together. I love to write. I write all the time. And the idea of the car, which, is, by the way, that's in the book. That name of the car is called the Takeus, so that's where that all comes from. But where I came from that was is that I really had this idea for a long time of inventing this, like you say, this car that runs on no energy, actually. It actually creates its own energy, which is possible, by the way. Mm-hmm. And when it all came together, I thought, boy, I sure would like to build this car. And I went, boy, I sure wish I had the millions of dollars to develop it.
Ah, yes. And, John, that is one of the things that you start off That's the very first sentence in your book, in the prologue. The offer is $100 million. Now, most people can't even wrap their brains around that large a sum. But you have some good quotes that you start your book off with. One is, as we imagine the future, our responsibility now is to make that future our own. Robert Murdoch, who is the chairman and CEO of News Corp of New York Post, made that statement in 2007. And you said America, and this is, you know, your quote, you said America's become an entertainment-based society. If you want to change opinions, you must be able to entertain. And I understood those two quotes. Your book is really about disruptive technology. And when I went through your book and I read it, I called you and I talked to you about a man named Bruce DiPalma that my husband had known fairly well, who is was the brother of Brian DiPalma, the well-known producer, movie person. And Bruce was an inventor, and he had come up with an engine, and I had given you the information on the website, and you said that you, just before we went on air, you said, yes, you went and you looked at it, and this was an engine that had a momentum to it, and it would be better than the Energizer Bunny. What piqued your interest so that you wanted to know about not just the possibility, but the probability of being able to make this work? Bruce, he died, and there's a big mystery about his death, but he had been threatened. His life had been threatened. And then he left this as a public legacy. Anybody can go in and check this on the web. And I thought that was just so amazing. But what was it for you that really stimulated this interest? Was it practical situations or conditions, or were you just curious?
Well, I'd like to say I saw the real big picture of this, but really I saw the little picture of, could you really do something like that? Mm-hmm. And then as I opened up the little picture, it got to be the big picture. And the big picture is that for all, you know, I mean, with everything that's happening in our world, oil is like, you know, I call it the dark evil, the mm-hmm. black evil. And it's not really evil. I mean, it's a product like anything else, but it is so it's in every part of our lives. And the second book that I did, not this one's not out yet. It's called Sealed Truths. Goes deeper into all those problems or those things. But it's really easy if you just stop right now. Anybody listening to this, and just if your eyes are closed, open them, and I guarantee you see oil right now. Well, it mm-hmm. doesn't look like oil. It looks like plastic, probably, or some kind of a petrochemical. But it's in every bit of our lives, everywhere. And I mean, if you really think about this in depth, you'd realize that, you know, there's really only four basic building materials on, you know, that we use. You know, I mean, commonly, I mean, you could build a house out of cloth or animal hides, I guess, or maybe an igloo. But for the most part, you're stuck with rock, which is, you know, sand, stone, concrete, mm-hmm. all those products, marble, granite, or, you know, you're in the metal realm, steel and aluminum mostly. You know, steel's in every foundation in every house, pretty much in America, I guess. And, you know, in other parts. And then, of course, wood. You know, wood's been around forever and ever. But if you really stop and think about the wood and the steel and the rock, you'll start seeing that the fourth thing that's come along in our lifetime, it's really become huge, is petrochemicals, plastic. For all, you know, mm-hmm. a lot more than plastic, but that's a big part of it. It's just plastics. I mean, it's taken the place of the copper in your pipes. It's taken the place of a lot of the wood in your house, you know, or the wood is a composite, you know, like plywood's a composite. Or even like the rock, you know, the countertops of now are, a lot of them are, you know, the fake stuff. So it's everywhere. My point is that if you really stop and look at gasoline and the gasoline products that it's out there, and then you look at petrochemicals, you realize that petrochemicals started as a byproduct of making gasoline. And now the petrochemicals are huge. I mean, we couldn't live without the petrochemicals. If we did have someone who invented a car, like the one in the book, and you didn't need the petrochem, I mean, or you didn't need the gasoline anymore, what are you going to do with all the gasoline when it's made? I mean, to get to the petrochemicals, because the petrochemicals have become more valuable to us. I mean, look at some of our newest jet planes are made of composites. I mean, are plastics, essentially, carbon fibers and all that stuff. What are you going to do with all the gasoline?
Yes, it would be very disruptive, because gasoline, in many respects, was a byproduct. In fact, Ford, when he came up with his Model T, he had been experimenting with using very inexpensive fuel, including water, I think. I mean, there was the knowledge already when Mr. Ford was working on the Model T, but gasoline was so cheap. It was so cheap. They said, well, we'll use the gasoline, because there was just an abundance of it. They didn't know how to utilize it in the other way. The thinking just wasn't there, and that's a long time ago. In your book, you say, and because the invention is called Takeus, that the invention Takeus will change the power structure of the world. Companies that make a combined $600 billion in profit will go broke. The powerful will become powerless. And wars that are ongoing now will fizzle out. Now, this is just in one of your paragraphs. And the comment about all the products that we use, you're right. And so many of these chemicals even are incorporated into medicinal applications. So we're never going to run out of uses for oil. It's very important. It has a very valuable aspect. But this with the gasoline and this with the engine that you have in your book, and you describe it as an electric car, but it's a self-contained producer of electrical energy. And that really grabbed me, because I've talked with different people throughout the years who have said this is entirely possible. When you put this book together, who were the people that were the stimulus for you to take this comment, this concept, and take it into this wonderful story about a man who invents this and goes across the country and all of the adventures and dangers that he faces?
Well, what I did with that, and not just who helped me shape all those thoughts. I mean, most of that just came from a lot of my imagination, but there's so much research that through the years that you read and kind of put together, you really can't put a true name on people like that. However, what I was trying to say is that the idea that you can, go back with the electric car idea. The problem with the electric car idea is that they are consumers of electrical energy. They're consumers. They're not producers. And the whole idea of making an electric car that's just going to consume is never going to work, I don't believe, because the battery storage is just, it's virtually impossible. Now, you do have to have batteries to get you going, because you can't start making something without, I mean, you can't start making power without actually having power to start making power, if you know what I mean. So that would be where the batteries could come into. But the generation of power by utilizing friction going down the highway, tires turning, is a real easy concept that could work today on every electric car that's been made, the Volt and the Nissan car and all that stuff. Would it be self-generating? Could you just keep it going forever and ever and ever? Well, of course not, because everything mechanical wears out eventually. So it has to come into the shop for being fixed once in a while. You know, that's just how it's going to be. So when people start talking about those things that run forever and ever and ever, you really can't do that. But there is a way that you can reduce the friction in any kind of a motor that's going down the highway, particularly the concept that I'm talking about. And I hate to say this, it's in much more detail in the second book.
Uh-huh. Well, that's all right. We have to get through the first one, because this is really quite a wild ride through the book. It really is a fascinating read. But, yes, these things with the friction and other stuff. Now, your story involves John, who's the inventor. You gave him your name, which I thought was interesting. But one of the points that you bring out is that this isn't a car that's putt, that's only going to go 40 miles an hour. This is a vehicle that's designed to go up to 180 miles an hour. And, of course, the power generation, that's been one of the biggest challenges with these supposed energy-saving vehicles, is that, one, you can't go very far with them, and, two, that you have to keep them plugged in all the time, and, three, they can't, it can't go very fast. You're almost like pedaling a bicycle, it feels like. But yet I know there are a few people in our area here in Seattle that I see with them, but they're these little tiny, dinky, they look like little bugs, just little tiny things. And you don't want to take one on the freeway because nobody's going to see them. It's really something that if you want to just trek down to the grocery store, that's great. But the price tag on these things is through the ceiling.
That's pretty crazy, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's asinine. It really is.
Mm-hmm. So the idea, the concept of the fact is, like the Prius or anything else, the electrics work at low speed. And as you start going faster, that's when the gasoline kicks in on the hybrids. Okay, that's kind of the opposite that I see it being. I see as you're going down the highway and your wheels are turning, I mean, the real concept is your wheels. And the reason why that is because it has a mechanical ratio effect. In other words, if you're going 60 miles an hour, and you have like an average low-profile 20-inch rim tire, that tire is turning about 700 RPM, 690 something. Well, if you can ratio that up into a, say, a 2-inch pulley, then you have a 10-to-1 ratio. So, in other words, your tire is turning at 700 RPMs, your alternator or your generator is turning at 7,000 RPM. And there's actually a way of even getting higher than that. And the point here is that every time your tire turns, your tire's turning, you're creating what I would call free energy. And the reason why it's free is because your tire's turning anyhow. I mean, it's what it's doing. And so is your drive shaft and a number of other things that are spinning in your car. Well, anytime that's there, and you can find a way to make something pretty with a very low degree of friction to turn with that, you're going to create free energy. And that's all. And that's the basic concept behind it. It's a lot more complicated than that, but, I mean, that's kind of it.
Well, you have got characters in your book that I just found extremely interesting. You have Lena Delaney, a woman who is a reporter that ends up going with John on this across-the-country adventure, where he has experiences where people, one, want to have him sell to them, and this is a representation of the big companies, because this kind of disruptive technology would really affect them big time. And two, you also have those people, those characters in the book representing the oil industry itself that don't want to see this happen because it will undermine them. When you put these characters together in the book, which, by the way, for those of you listening, it really makes for a very interesting read, you also have this juicy romance between Lena and John that ends up developing. You bring in some of your Vietnam background and experience in it. It really is intriguing how you make a point that this individual, who's getting a lot of publicity, this wasn't what he set out to get, but Lena brings this to him. It really creates a whirlwind. Do you think that would be the effect of this?
I absolutely do. As a matter of fact, to deal with those things, what you just said has happened many times before where big business interest goes and buys the idea, I should say, and shelves it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's happened many, many times. I mean, it's I You can just look for the internet. You'll see it happen everywhere. The part about the book itself, I know, you can read it like a thriller, and it's just a fun book to read. Or you can start looking at the different layers. And that's why the book got all the awards, because there's so many layers to this book. I mean, I like to tell you, I designed them all that way. And some of them I did. Some of them came out better than the other ones. But it's so layered, and there's so many little stories going on with the big stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like my hero Hemingway. It's like the iceberg, you know. You see mm-hmm. a little bit of iceberg above the water, but the real story is kind of underneath it. And so many people, I've gotten so many emails back, and so many people just love the little stories underneath it. And I actually do, too. You know, the romance in there is kind of a fun thing. But the whole idea was writing it in novel form is because people just, you know, that's what that entertainment quote was all about. People just don't read hard fiction, real fiction. I mean, I'm sorry, nonfiction stuff. Just they don't get into the difficult things. It's so much better if you can entertain them and put the ideas and concepts in front of them in a novel form. And it really kind of has their minds open already, and then they kind of accept the stuff that you're trying to tell them.
You bring out points, and you're talking about the different levels. You bring out the points where it's predicted the gasoline's going to cost $12 a gallon. Well, this year, to many people's amazement, the gasoline prices are going down. Here in the state of Washington, where I reside, we have the highest gasoline prices in the nation. And that's because of all the taxes that they pack on to this. We're also one of the highest taxed states in the United States. But with this concept, as it is being put through and described in the book, there is a lot of fear that if this disruptive technology would come out, one, people wouldn't have to spend so much on this commodity called gasoline, and they would be able, as families, as individuals, to save thousands and thousands of dollars. But they also, in quoting a sentence from your book, it's more than saving money, it's a matter of giving people more control of their own destinies. That's one of the things about the people in the United States is when Mr. Ford brought out a vehicle that his own employees could afford to buy, Americans started traveling across the country. Good roads, they were hardly existent, and by golly, the expansion of roads after the development of the Model T Ford was just amazing. I mean, it's just incredible. And the one thing that Americans like, and it is very, very positive, I think, is mobility. They like being able to get in their vehicles, go to where they want to go, and just have that freedom of choice. And this is something that is so very important. And when it comes to the Middle East, you have a little bit of the political environment in the book. Our country wouldn't have to depend on foreign oil. That would affect their economic situation quite dramatically. All of these subtle, these subtle points you bring out, which I just find extremely, extremely interesting, and I can understand why people liked it. Now, I won't give all the information about all the delicious parts in the book of the interactions with various groups, various people, but you're correct about many inventions being purchased by companies and then being put on a shelf. I shared this with you, and I'll share it with my audience. There, many years ago, I was down in Hanford, California, and I was talking with a client, and she said one of their neighbors had invented an oil filter that never, ever needed to be changed. Not ever. Well, the person apparently brought the information to the big companies, and they came out, they made an agreement with him. He got a certain amount of money. Nobody ever knew how much it was, but he never, ever mentioned anything about this oil filter that could be used on infinitum that would just not wear out. So mm-hmm. It disappeared. So your comment is well placed, and I've heard, just like you have said, stated, many other stories where things have disappeared because often the inventors don't have the money to develop it. And if they did get the money to develop it with an angel investor of whatever type, getting it to market and getting it out there and having the patience to deal with that is really a big challenge.
You know, what you said is so correct. And what I try to do with the character in the book, the character John in the book, is to give him so much character that he refuses to sell it out, that he wants to see it, because he knows what it's going to do. And so I try to give that character so much character that he's the guy that is going to either die or not die getting this product out, because it means that much to him. And the money thing, you know, we're going to talk about the money thing all day long. What would it take to make something like this happen? Does everybody have a price? Yada, yada, yada. You know, you can get on and on with that. The point is that Henry Ford went up against the horse industry, I guess, huh?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did, big time.
And he changed that whole paradigm. Well, him and some other people, but that's what they were against at the time. So you know it can be done. It's just it's not going to be easy. And I kind of say it in the book that, and I'm really pretty much a believer in this, government's never going to be the one that's going to make this happen. It's going to be some guy.
Oh no, they've never been the one to make anything happen. That just doesn't work that way.
We're in agreement.
They can't. It's a bureaucracy. They can't. And most people in the bureaucracy cannot recognize it. Now, there are a few that might, but most can't. And the whole system defeats innovation. It totally defeats innovation. That's why, in my belief, that the American spirit is so important. The entrepreneur is so important. And that's what your character, to me, represents. It's someone that has the courage, the mentality, the character. I like that word, the character that says this is meant to belong to the average person. And it's one of the things that comes out is as John is going across the country and Lena is giving him this coverage, which really was not supposed to have started, but it happens. And then this is going out over the, you know, over the airwaves, and people, when they see him coming, they're excited. They're really excited. They see, wow, I sure could use this. Let me know when it's ready. I mean, all of the support from the average person as they're going through certain towns. But then it gets to be quite a dangerous proposition. And so there is a lot going on here. John, your book, The Take Us, as we mentioned earlier, has won a number of awards. This novel is great, and I can hardly wait to see what the next one is. But if you have a love of the chase, the thrill, innovation, development, intrigue, all kinds of factors. As John said, it's got multiple layers to it. This is a great read, and summertime is a wonderful time to have a book in hand and to take it wherever you go. I love it. And this is something, the book Take Us by John Raymond Take Us. Now, his last name is spelled T-A-K-A-C-S. The book is T-A-K-E-U-S, and you can go to the website, thetake-us.com, and you'll find out more information. John, I
want one little correction there.
Okay.
One little correction. There is no dash on the website. The take-us is one word.
Thank you. Okay, so take-us is one word. There is no dash. My error. So that's corrected. The take-us, T-A-K-E-U-S. .com. Check it out. John, thanks so much. You have to send me this new book when it comes out.
Oh, I'll get it to you for sure.
Okay, John.
Thank you very
much. This is Donna Sebo, John Raymond Take Us, and his book, The Take Us. Check out the website, thetakeus.com. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you. We offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And, of course, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And I always like to know what part of the country or the world you're calling in from. And let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Russell Targ, the reality of ESP. Russell Targ is world-renowned. He was very much involved in working with secret government agencies to develop remote viewing, doing all kinds of research, and the research was just amazing. Well, Russell, when he started out with us, didn't believe that ESP was something that existed. He was in the position of the skeptic, big time. Well, that's not been the case for a number of years, and this book is absolutely fascinating, and I think you'll find Russell a very interesting person as well. So that's what's coming up tomorrow. And again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. Along with the theme that we've been talking about today relative to innovation, disruptive technology invention, I really enjoyed a story. Now, this steps back in time a little bit. We're going to be tripping back at the time meter to 1931. There was a couple, Ted and Dorothy Husted. They moved to a little town in South Dakota, and they moved there with their family because it had a good school, it had a church, a doctor. And they believed in opportunity. Now, in 1930, pharmacies were around, but not many of them. And in this little town, called Wall, South Dakota, they felt that this offered them a wonderful opportunity. They were going to open up a pharmacy. Well, Wall, South Dakota, in the 1930s, was in the middle of nowhere. It was between the Black Hills and the Badlands. Well, you can imagine, their first year in business, they hardly had enough people to even keep them in business. Not only that, but the environment was terrible. You had thick dust storms. When it got hot, it was hot. Winds were just awful. They just would come in with a fury. Well, they really thought that maybe they'd move on to a place that was going to be more to their purpose. However, they didn't leave Wall, South Dakota. One of the things that they noticed after their first year is that the routing through South Dakota to get from one point to another took people through their community of Wall. They didn't have 7-Elevens in many places at that time, and you could drive for miles and miles and miles and not even find a gasoline station, much less a place to get some water. So they said, wow, what can we do? We need people to stop in where we are. They came up with something, a simple sign. And the sign read as follows, free ice water at Wall Drugstore. Who would have thought it would have made a difference? Well, they found that people absolutely loved this big sign. And in fact, this sign became a novelty. So they decided to make more signs. And they put them further and further out from Wall, South Dakota. Do you know this sign eventually ended up in Europe, India, Korea, Egypt, even the North Pole? Talk about out-of-the-box thinking. Now, eventually, their idea of offering free ice water was picked up by a number of other businesses, but no one else had thought to advertise this luxury. Do you know that this pharmacy that supposedly would never make it ended up having 4,000 to 6,000 customers a day stopping in? What that story tells me is that we need to remember that we can come up with what some people would say, a gimmick. Find a gimmick. Something that is going to enable us to bring to ourselves what it is we need. You know what? I think a great tool to use is brainstorming. What can be done that is going to put you apart from everybody else? How do you do it? Well, sometimes that brainstorming over a cup of tea or coffee and a brownie or what have you with some other people that don't know that they are limited in their thinking. They don't have to be limited. They just say, let's make things happen. Make things work. A simple idea about a simple sign ending up going around the world. I thought I would share that with you today because I think that's what the show is about today more than anything else. It's about innovation. What is it that we can do? And we need to be open and responsive to new ideas. In fact, that's going to be coming up in future programs. Sometimes we need to reinvent ourselves, and that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. But it causes change, and change for, well, a lot of people is very disruptive. Well, we're going through a lot of changing times right now. So instead of being angry about it, why not find out how you can be resourceful? How can you utilize the change that you're experiencing to make your life an even better one? I have a very dear friend that ended up moving to her hometown in Nebraska. And that wasn't something that she planned on doing, but where she had been, she had lost everything, just about everything. 6 months later, and we had a conversation just last week where she said, if anybody had told me, number one, that I would end up losing basically everything that was most important to me, that I would have to start all over again as a mature woman, I would have said, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. But that's what happened to her. However, 6 months later, she said, I have more than I even had before. After having so much removed from my life, I've ended up with so much more. Her life is so much richer. Fascinating phenomena, isn't it? Absolutely fascinating. And I wanted to share this wonderful, wonderful poem. I actually have two in front of me that I just think are precious. But on the note that I just finished with the story that I shared. This is attributed to Elizabeth Barrett Browning, and this is how it reads. Out in the fields with God, the little cares that fretted me, I lost them yesterday, among the fields above the sea, among the winds at play, among the lowing of the herds, the rustling of the trees, among the singing of the birds, the humming of the bees. The foolish fears of what may happen, I cast them all away, among the clover-scented grass, among the new-mown hay, among the rustling of the corn where drowsy poppies nod, where ill thoughts die and good are born, out in the field with God. Beautiful poem. I love that. Thought I would share that with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Now, I have a recipe that I want to share with you. It's a real easy one. It's barbecue time, so why not use your grill for something special? But I also have a recipe. Well, let me skip the grill right now. I've got a recipe here for stuffed bread. This is so yummy, and it makes four nice-sized rolls, and I'm going to be sharing that with you, so you might want to have a pad of paper and a pen. It's really, really easy to do, and you could make it vegetarian style, or you could make it, you know, a hearty meat style, whatever your pleasure will be. So I'll be sharing that with you after we come back from the break. But before we do that, I wanted to share with you a story that I thought was absolutely amazing. And it's about teleported trees. Now, I know if you saw Avatar, you saw the floating rocks, you saw all kinds of things floating through the air, and fairy tales have often had stories about floating islands, etc. Well, this is about teleported trees, and it's amazing. Now, this is recorded in 1582 on January the 3rd. There was a clump of land complete with trees and bushes lifted into the air and transported 40 yards before it was set down. Now, there was a Tudor analyst named Stowe who reported the event, and he said it happened in a hermitage in Dorset, England. On Sunday, the 3rd of January, 1582, in the valley of the Surf Blank, Dorset, a piece of earth suddenly quitted its place of former time and was transported 40 yards to another paddock in which there were alders and willows. It stopped the high road leading to the little town of Cerne, yet the same hedges that surrounded it still enclose it today. And the trees that were there are still standing. The place this bit of land occupied is now a big hole. All kinds of items, even animals, people have been reported to have been mysteriously transplanted from one spot to another. In the 9th century, there are two reports of land teleportation in Prussia. And this was recorded in AD 822. They said this year a prodigious portent occurred in Thuringia. A foot and a half of turf was suddenly seen to be lifted into the air from over an area of 25 feet. It happened on the border of Saxony and Misnia. The earth swelled, erected itself in a heap near Lake Anosium, creating a mound nearly 3,000 paces long. Also, in 840, there is a report that was compiled at St. Burton's Abbey of St. Cecil, and that was a clod of earth over 50 feet long, 14 feet broad, 6 feet thick, no hand touching it, was cut off and raised into the air. The earth was puffed up like a mound of one league. You often wonder, what is at work when these reports are made and things are transported? Fascinating stuff. Not the first time, and it won't be the last time. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. We're taking a break. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, let's get to this stuffed bread recipe. Now, what I wanted to do was share with you, if you don't have a grill, you can also use this recipe and bake it in the oven. If you have a grill, your grill needs to be at approximately, 390 degrees Fahrenheit or 200 degrees centigrade. And you want to use a pizza slab. And that would be, like one of those stone slabs that you can put in your oven or put it on the grill so that it totally becomes heated. You don't want this bread coming into direct contact with the grill itself. So that's very, very important. And it's something that, it just makes sense. Anyway, here is the recipe for this. And this is really, really good. And if you have kids, they are going to love this. And so will adults. And it's really easy to fix. Now, what you're going to do, you need to make up your bread. You're going to need 5 cups of flour, 1 cup of water, 1 teaspoon of salt. You need 1 package of dry yeast. And I think I would say the quick rising yeast would be very good. And you need just a pinch of sugar. And what I would say to you is you want to take your yeast and your sugar and put it into the water. Make sure you have the equivalent of a 2-cup container because your yeast, as it begins to feed on the sugar, it's going to rise. And it'll rise really, really fast in your container that you're letting it sit in. And that little pinch of sugar just really makes the yeast work extremely fast. And then once that is working and it's very much alive, stir it quickly, and then you put it into your flour, and you mix your flour, and you knead your flour until it becomes nice and smooth and elastic. Now, for your filling with this, you can use 1 zucchini, one eggplant, 2 tomatoes. I would say take out the seeds of the inner part of the tomato. Use the actual meaty part of the tomato. And then you can have, about 5 to 6 ounces of feta cheese. A clove of garlic is very good with this. You want to chop that up fine, a little bit of salt and pepper. Dried rosemary is a wonderful herb to use with this if you are so inclined. But remember, there's no limit to how you can utilize this. Now, what you want to do, once your dough is made and it has really just become really slick and smooth and it's no longer sticking to your hand, you want to divide the dough into 4 equally large parts, and you want to roll each one out as a round. That's right. You want to roll it out as a round. many people that are getting phone calls. We've been even getting phone calls about, gee, we want to help you redo your mortgage, blah, blah, blah. You've got to be careful about this because there's a lot of scammers that are out to get your money and will not be able to do what they're saying they're going to do. So whatever you do, don't sign up for papers. Don't sign anything to anybody regarding this. You want to find out if you're concerned about mortgage assistance. Go to the HUD-approved credit counselors. Give them a call at the HOPE hotline. Their number is 888-995-4673. That's 888-995-4673. Please, you have some fast talkers. We just had an incident occur not too long ago that it just really brings us home. There are a lot of scammers out there. You're going to have to be more than alert than ever before. So don't let somebody take your hard-earned asset and end up removing you from it because they are a con. So don't do that. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have an utterly magnificent day or evening wherever you are. And we'll be back here with you, same time, same place, the Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.